you like me, dear listeners? Do you feel deep unease when you've been without your laptop for too long? When it's been too much time since you held the comforting gaze of your screen? This is Jones and Wolf, a monthly audio fiction podcast featuring original music. This month's story, Robot Love, is about a man who goes all the way with a machine. Enjoy. Tokyo. Or was it Okinawa? I can't remember. All these cities are starting to look the same to me. After the genetic coding bill passed, all these people been looking the same to me too. Hard to tell who's a clone and who's an original. You can always spot the robots though. They always have a tell. A freaky jerk of the neck that comes out of nowhere, or a bunch of rapid blinks that makes them look like they're having a seizure. Most of the ones downtown these days are cheap and full of glitches. It's not uncommon for one of them to walk up to you long after midnight and say, "Hey stranger, lucky we got all this sunshine today, isn't it?" That's why I was so surprised when I found out that Mikaniko was a robot. I hadn't been able to spot it, not by a long shot. She had always seemed so human to me. I guess, human enough for me to pretend. I met her in Hanoi. Or was it Saigon? I honestly don't remember. All these memories are starting to blur in my mind. I was on the run at the time, trying to lay low after my last bright idea had gone belly up. I guess I should have known that the market for DNA cards had dried up the year before. But my partner, a guy named Jack Tarr, was dumb enough to put up the money, and I took everything he had once I knew we weren't going to make a cent off DNA. So I was on the run with his money in my front pocket, and I knew it was only a matter of time before he'd be hot on my trail. Guys like Jack Tarr are short on brains, but big on muscle. Me? I never had a problem with the hustle. It's what I did best. So when I took the train from Cambodia to Vietnam, I figured I'd outrun Jack easy enough. And I knew I'd find another score before his money ran out. Just like everything else, I figured it for a cinch. What I didn't figure on, though, was Mikaniko. How could I have? It's hard to predict robot love. I met her in an all-night rundown gin bar, thinking about my next score while I waited for the sun to come up one morning. She walked in that dive looking fresh as a water lily. Her silk dress swished back and forth as she stepped through the stink of old men and booze and came and sat down right next to me. She stuck a long cigarette between her two red lips and said, "Hey cowboy, give me a light." I turned, gave her the once over, and then took out a matchbook real smooth. Struck some fire before she could change her mind. The match lit up her face. She had big almond eyes beneath jet black hair that hung low in all the right places. I was just about to order her a drink, but she slipped out. That same silk dress swishing back and forth, untouched by the grease and stink. An old man who stared long after she'd gone, still drooling, forgetting about her only when they remembered that they needed to order another drink. I glimpsed her again the next night, just for a second, outside a gambling club inside the Dao Fun District. I thought I saw her again inside the Conrad Hotel Lounge, but when I looked closer for her, all I could find was a lipstick-stained, half-smoked cigarette. It went on like that for a week before I finally caught up with her. I was beginning to get suspicious. I thought maybe she was working for Jack Tarr. So one night, I grabbed her by the arm and put her up against the wall in front of Lucky's Card Club, looking for some answers. "Why are you following me?" I said. She looked at me, totally expressionless, and slipped from my grip. She stuck a cigarette between her lips. "Don't you get it?" she said. "You're the one that's been following me." We both paused. I tried to read her face, but there was nothing there. Finally, she broke the silence. "Snap out of it, cowboy," she said, "and give me a light." She started shacking up with me at my hotel room downtown after that. I still had some of Jack Tarr's money left, but it was fading fast. I hadn't had an idea for a new score in weeks. only thing I could seem to think about was her. She wasn't like anyone else I'd ever met. I couldn't read her. I had no idea what her angle was. For all I knew, she could have been setting me up for Jack all along. Some nights, she would leave for hours, not getting back until morning. When I asked her about it, she'd just smile and curl up against me like a cat, falling fast asleep. Normally, that sort of thing doesn't bother me. We all have secrets, and sometimes it's better for everyone if you never start telling them. But she was starting to get her hooks into me. So the next night, I followed her when she slipped out. I had to know what was going on. She led me all over town that night, from the residential to the red light district, in and out of the bars downtown, up and down high-rise apartment buildings. I started to expect the worst. Finally, I followed her inside when she went into the Comrade Hotel. I saw her take the elevator to the 7th floor. I ran up the stairs and knocked on all the doors, desperate to know what was going on. And then I found her. An overweight, balding man opened the door. I blew by him before he could stop me and rushed to her. She was sitting on the edge of the bed. "Mikaniko," I said, "what are you doing here?" She looked at me, didn't say anything. "She works for me," the old man said. Mikaniko nodded. Her eyes were glossed over in a strange way and her movement was rigid, almost mechanical. "I work for Mr. Kane," she said. I felt my heart sink down into my stomach. I could hardly believe the feeling. I thought my heart had dried up years ago. Mr. Kane walked toward the bed. He must have sensed my despair. "This sort of thing happens," he said. "But don't take it so hard, my good man. After all, she's only a robot." I had heard stories of robot love, but I never really believed them. You'd hear these rumors about some old, lonely guy buying a female robot for companionship, and then losing his mind over it, changing his will, forgetting about his family and leaving all his money to a machine. Or guys who were totally delusional, who had convinced themselves that a bot was a real person, or that they were really robots too. It was crazy, convoluted, and I never figured on something like that happening to me. I left the Comrade Hotel in a stupor that night, dazed from what I'd heard. And Mikaniko, she was gone for good the next day. After doing some investigating, I found out that Mr. Kane had taken her along with his other robot girls further east, to Japan possibly. I used the last of Jack Tar's money to buy a boat ride there. And that's how I wound up in Tokyo. Or was it Okinawa? I had been in so many cities since my search began that it was getting hard to remember. I was broke, washed out and weary, God knows where. Hazy from gin-soaked nights that got worse. Further, Mikaniko faded from my memory. It had been 5 months since I'd seen her. All my leads had dried up. Everyone seemed to know something about Mr. Kane, but it was mostly hearsay, half fantasy that made him out to be anyone from the most notorious cyber criminal in the Far East to a fallen diplomat brokering international deals with the finest robot escorts in Southeast Asia. What's worse, word had come through the wire that Jack Tar had finally figured out where I was, and had sent his enforcers my way. They could reach me any day now, but I didn't care anymore. I had it so bad for Mikaniko that I had let everything else go to slop. I was breaking all my own rules, and I was going to be put out of my misery soon enough. One night, after polishing off my 7th Thepoback straight gin, I started stumbling out of some dive downtown when I saw her. It was her. It had to be. She looked exactly as I remembered, except for the hair, which had been cut short like a boy's. "Mikaniko," I said, ready to collapse at her feet. She looked up at me, slightly confused. She was silent for a long time while she studied my face. Finally, she spoke. "I am Nikahoma," she said, Mikaniko's twin sister. I spent the rest of that night telling Nikahoma the whole sad story about her sister. After that, she filled me in on the rest. "Mikaniko's not a robot," she said. "The bastard pimp Mr. Kane's specialty is kidnapping girls and brainwashing them, convincing them that they're machines." Nikahoma knew where Mr. Kane was with the girls, a small resort town 30 miles toward the coast, just in time for the tourist season. She wanted me to go with her to help save her sister. Well, I guess love does strange things to people, but I never figured out anything turning me into the good guy. I didn't know if that was a role I felt comfortable playing. Still, going with Nikahoma seemed a whole lot better than drowning myself in gin every night, waiting around to get offed by Jack Tar's thugs. In the end, it was a no-brainer. So I set off with Nikahoma to try to save Mikaniko from the evil pimp Mr. Kane. And I didn't know how it was all going to turn out. But like with all good love stories, I guess you never do. I guess it's never too late to surprise yourself by an act of goodness, especially when it's for a fellow human being. Robot Love was written and narrated by me, Anthony Jones. The music was done by Joel Wolf. And now a favor, if you've liked the stories we've put out so far, please share them with your friends. The more listeners, the faster we'll be able to produce more work in the future. Until we meet again, my ephemeral friends, thanks for listening. And stay safe out there.